Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you guys. My guest today is Enika Edenfield. Enika Edenfield is a lover of all things Savannah, Georgia, and spooky. She originally moved to Savannah in 2010 to work as a news producer at the NBC affiliate. There, she gained a vast appreciation for the city's long and diverse history, but she also began experiencing the paranormal. During the pandemic shutdown, she found herself without a job and began creating videos on TikTok about her city's weird and haunted history, as well as her own experiences with ghosts. Enika also began speaking with other Savannah visitors and locals about their own encounters. In 2021, she started her own tour company offering walking history and ghost tours of downtown. She's not done gathering ghostly encounters, though. Enika brings her journalistic integrity to paranormal investigations in and around Georgia, and I can't wait to chat with her. Enika, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we have Tammy Chavez to thank for setting this all up, too, because she's like, I have somebody you have to have on your show. She's so great.
Tammy's the best.
Yeah, we love her. And Tammy's with Hollywood Paranormal, in case those listening are like, Tammy who? She's been on the show before. So I've always been interested in Savannah, and I know that it's super haunted, but I have never been there.
Never.
So I would love for you to fill me in on everything. I mean, I want to know the history. I want to know the hauntings, like where I should go when I do finally get the chance to go there, like everything.
There's a lot. I'm not sure if we have enough time today.
That's probably true. Well, that's okay. We might have to just have you back on in a second time. let's start with, can you tell me a little bit about the history of Savannah? Because I know that there's like all kinds of things from disease and pandemics to war and all kinds of things that were going on there.
Yes. Savannah has a reputation as the most haunted city in the country, according to some. I always like to joke that, how do you really qualify that? Like, do you go door to door, knock on doors and ask people how many ghosts they have there? But when you just look at the history of Savannah and Georgia, the history itself lends itself to a lot of hauntings. Georgia, before it was a state, it was actually the 13th and final British colony in what is now the continental United States. I like to say that we're lucky 13. And we're lucky to an extent. Savannah is Georgia's first colonized city. This is where Georgia, as we know it today, gets started. And it gets started on a relatively good note, all things considered, for a colony. But then, of course, being an old city, terrible things are bound to happen at some point. We were involved in the American Revolution. We were the site of the Siege of Savannah, which is actually one of the bloodier battles of the Revolution, and most people have never heard of it. We've also been plagued by epidemics, yellow fever being a very prominent one in the 1800s, which we know now was caused by mosquitoes. Back then, they thought it was the bad air. We have had a lot of tragedy because we're a port city. And of course, when you're talking about ships, there's a lot of tragedy involved there. We are a coastal city, which means that we have had to deal with hurricanes. And we actually also had an earthquake in 1886.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. This is something you think about on the East Coast. The epicenter was actually right outside of Charleston, which geographically is only about 60 miles away from Savannah. We got some really strong tremors from that. It was somewhere around a 7.2 in Charleston, about a 5 in Savannah.
Whoa, that's a big one too.
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, I was writing down some of the history. I'm like, first of all, they were talking about going back to like indigenous people. There's burial grounds and everything. Pirates, the slave trade, yellow fever, fires and battles, specifically American Revolution, murders and suicide, underground tunnels, hoodoo and voodoo. Like all these things were coming up. I was like, oh my gosh.
Now, I will say that we're much less piratey than a lot of people want us to be.
Okay.
The pirate stuff is really just good marketing.
Oh.
But we were founded after the golden age of piracy, so we didn't get any of like the big sexy pirates that you normally think of, like Blackbeard. We
got
French privateers.
Yeah. Okay. And do I hear a kitty in the background?
Yes, that is my cat Lilith. If I close the door, she thinks she needs to be a part of something.
Yes, my cats do that too. I cannot close the door with them out because then they have to be in. And if I close the door with them in, they have to be out.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be left open a little bit so they can come and go. So we'll probably be hearing more from Kitty.
Yes.
What do you think it is about the history there that makes it the most haunted? Like, what do you think? Or is there one thing?
It's just got that vibe to it. I first moved to Savannah in 2010, and I have lived my entire life in the South, but driving into Savannah, I just instantly fell in love with the city. There was something about it, and I knew I had to move here. And it's like that for a lot of people. I always tell people that if you are meant to be in Savannah, Savannah will make a way for you. There's just an intrinsic magic about the city.
I feel it without even having been there. Like, I feel like a draw there, that like I want to go there, that I definitely have to go there at some point.
You should.
I will. I definitely will. My husband and I were just in Florida, like I think it was in June, and we were talking about next time we come here, we should rent a car and like drive and do Savannah and, you know, other places like this. It would be such an amazing road trip.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be so cool. And I'll have to like set up time so we could get your tour.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so there's one famous, well, I'm sure there's others, but there's one famous place that I know of, the Bonaventure Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It looks, from photographs, it looks gorgeous. Like, I love all the Spanish moss. Like, it just looks magical and beautiful.
It is. It started off in the 1840s as a Victorian garden cemetery. Because the Victorians were, you know, really romanticizing death, dying, and the mourning process. And it's just a beautiful cemetery to go. I was actually just out there this afternoon.
Oh, wow.
Because I am a member of the Bonaventure Historical Society. And so I was out there filming for some stuff I'm working on for them. And every time I go out there, I notice something different. It's 103 acres. And it's still being used. People are still being buried out there. And it's bragging rights to be buried out there in this gorgeous old cemetery with the towering live oaks and Spanish moss right on the river. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I've only seen photos, but it looks amazing. But I've heard that there's some ghost stories that go along with that cemetery.
So I will be honest, Bonaventure isn't as ghosty as Colonial Park Cemetery downtown.
Okay, that was my second one.
So the big story that you usually hear about Bonaventure is the story of little Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
Gracie was the daughter of two hotel managers downtown. They managed a hotel off of Johnson Square. That was the Pulaski House Hotel. The hotel is gone. There's a Regions Bank there now. But she was their only child. She passed away in the late 1880s from pneumonia just a couple of months before she was supposed to turn 7.
Mm.
And her parents were devastated. They never had any other children. And they paid for this very expensive lot out in Bonaventure and then paid an artist named John Walls to construct a headstone, carve a headstone of her based off of what we believe is probably her Easter photograph from that year. So the headstone that you see on her lot is her. And because it's so lifelike, and because her parents unfortunately ended up moving away, and when they died, they were buried in New York, not in Savannah with their daughter, all these legends have sprung up around her. And people say that her statue comes alive at night and runs around the cemetery. I haven't seen that. I've been there after dark. People say that if you steal any of the gifts that people leave in front of her grave, because people leave a ton of stuff out there, toys, money, just random things. Apparently, if you steal any of those, that her statue cries tears of blood. I haven't seen that either. But my bank is that Regent's Bank that was built on top of the site of the hotel. And I went in there one day. I had been waiting for years to ask the tellers there if they have ever seen little Gracie, because I've always heard like third and fourth hand accounts that people have seen her in the bank or in the square right outside of the bank. Never talked to anybody who actually had seen her. But every time I would go into my bank, they would be really busy and I didn't want to bother them. Well, one day it lined up perfectly. I go in, I'm the only customer. There's one teller. She's not super busy. And as she's, you know, typing in all the information to deposit my check for me, I lean over and I ask her, you know, does anything weird ever happen here? And she doesn't even look up. She's still typing. And she says, oh yeah, we see little Gracie all the time.
Wow. That gave me like a little chill, like a quick zing.
They said that she's a very polite ghost. She apparently likes to open doors for them when they're cleaning up. At the end of the night, they said she'll open doors for them and close them. And they always say, thank you, Gracie. They have had customers come in looking really concerned and saying, hey, there was a little girl in front of the bank. She's by herself. Like, do we need to call her parents? Do you know who she is? And they're always like, that's fine. That's little Gracie. She can't be hit by a car. She's already dead.
Wow. That is so cool. So she's not hanging out at the cemetery so much. She's more at the bank.
Yeah, that's the people that I've talked to that have had encounters with her. It's always been at the bank or in the square in front of it.
What would you say is the next most? Well, you said that the Colonial Park Cemetery is much more haunted.
Yes. Cemetery has been through it.
Oh, no. What's happened?
The fact that there's anything left to see there is a miracle, really. It's our oldest still standing municipal cemetery. We did have two others before that. There's nothing left of those. So this is our oldest still standing one. It was used from 1750 to 1853. And when it closed, it was kind of left sitting there for a while. Nobody was actively doing maintenance. But finally in the 1890s, the city decided to turn it into a park, because they thought that was better than just letting it sit there. And of course, you know, headstones were pulled up to make way for pathways. Little kids were playing in there. And cemeteries are very fragile places. If you're not actively maintaining them, it does not take long for them to crumble away. And there wasn't a whole lot of active historic preservation going on there until the last half of the 20th century. And by that point, we were missing a lot of headstones, and we were also missing a lot of the earlier burial records, so we didn't know how many people were there. They didn't really figure that out until 1998, when an archaeological survey was done there. And they found more than 8,500 unmarked graves, if I'm remembering correctly.
Whoa, that was way more than I thought you were going to say.
There's so many unmarked graves in that cemetery, and you don't notice it because we're missing so many of the headstones.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was going to ask you too, when you said that the Bonaventure Cemetery was like Victorian garden style, do you mean mm-hmm. like when the Victorians used to like have picnics and things like that in the cemeteries?
Yes.
Okay, because I think that's such a cool tradition. And I mean, we have one cemetery that's kind of like that here in LA. It's Hollywood Forever. And you can have picnics. You can walk around. They show movies on the mausoleum wall. There's parties inside the mausoleum. Like, it's very much an active, like, not active paranormally. It might be that too, but very active as far as like events and social gatherings and things like that. And I think that's such a cool thing. Like, I always think that, like, if I'm dead and buried, like, I feel like it would be great to have people like still living and coming there and experiencing mm-hmm. things and having picnics and watching a movie in our day and age and stuff like things like that. I just feel like when there's a quiet of course, they're peaceful and beautiful. But when there's just like a quiet cemetery and it just seems like no one ever goes there and everything, I feel like that's just so lonely and sad.
And in Bonaventure, because we have the Historic Society that works to preserve the historic integrity, the stories, and the artwork, the actual headstones themselves, it is a very well-preserved cemetery. Because we do have some other cemeteries from that time period, and because they don't have a historical society attached to them, unfortunately, they're a little rundown. Mm-hmm. Not as well-maintained and loved as Bonaventure.
Well, I didn't mean to take you away from Colonial Park. I just remembered that I wanted to ask you about that because I thought that was such a cool tradition that the Victorians had.
Mm-hmm. And we do, if you go to Bonaventure, there's an old keeper's cottage at the front that is used by the city cemetery's office, but they do have some historic photographs in there. And some of the photographs are of people just, you know, hanging out in the cemetery, reading their books, having little picnics and everything.
Yeah.
So that's another really cool thing to check out if you get a chance.
Okay, so tell me about the hauntings at Colonial Park.
Yes, so back to Colonial Park.
Yes.
Colonial Park is so active. One of the more common encounters there that people have experienced actually happens during the day. People often see children in old-timey clothing, running around and playing and also disappearing on them. I have never seen the children myself, but I have picked up on them. And I had a foster dog who picked up on them.
Oh.
I foster for Renegade Paws Rescue here in town. And one of my previous fosters was this cute little puppy named Xavier, who didn't hate children. He just didn't trust them because they're small, they're loud, they move really quickly. He was like, I don't know what that's about. So keep my distance. Well, one day we were walking downtown and I thought, let's cut through Colonial Park Cemetery. We get through the gate, maybe 4 or 5 feet inside, and Xavier puts on the brakes. He's like, nope, we're not going anywhere. I'm trying to coax him forward. He's not budging. I'm looking around to see if there's anything weird going on, if somebody's acting, you know, strangely. There was no one else there. And after a while, he starts to back up. And I think, okay, whatever this is, you're done. Let's go home. A couple of days later, I'm back downtown with Xavier. And then I've also got my own dog, Vash, with me. And Vash is usually a pretty good guide for my foster dogs. He shows them, you know, that certain things are safe. I think we'll cut through Colonial Park Cemetery. Vash can show Xavier that it's not scary. Everything is fine. We get through the same gate, maybe 7 feet inside this time. My dog, totally fine. Xavier having a little puppy panic attack. He's pulling on the leash. He wants to get out of there. And again, there's really no one around. It's a nice, quiet day. And I think, I don't know what you're reacting to, but we will go. And later I was talking to my friend Cody, who's another volunteer at Renegade. I said it was so weird how he reacted like that because I've walked him around Bonaventure plenty of times. He doesn't have a problem with cemeteries. And she asked me, well, doesn't he have a problem with kids? And I said, yeah, but there weren't any kids out. And she said, no, Enika, the ghost kids at Colonial Park. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about them. So I never tried to walk Xavier through that cemetery again. But my dog is totally fine with the ghost kids. And there is actually a playground right behind the cemetery, because that makes sense.
Right.
and that is also a very haunted location. A lot of the ghost kids in the cemetery like to hang out on the playground because they didn't have the playground when they were alive. So, yeah, good for them. And every time we walk by there, my dog will perk up. His ears go up like he sees a friend. And I always feel this rush of energy like all these little kids are running up. So Vash is very popular with the ghost kids. And as long as he is cool with them, I am cool with them.
Yes. What have you experienced at the park? Anything like I always feel like it's an eerie thing when you see like a swing set moving or something. I have not witnessed that.
Happened. I have been walking by there at night when there is no wind blowing, no one's close to the park. And I watched one of those swings start to move back and forth on its own.
So I've wanted to see that happen before. I've actively gone to like, oh, this park is haunted. And I've been like, okay, swing set, move. And it hasn't. But I've seen video of that happening. That's so cool.
It's really freaky when it happens.
I bet. Especially if you see it just start up. Like if it was just sitting there and then all of a sudden just starts going.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. But also very cool. What would you say is the next most haunted location? Or is there more in that cemetery?
Honestly, if we keep talking about Colonial Park, we will be here all day because I can talk about the cemetery for a really long time. It is that haunted. So many things have happened there.
Tell me what you think the next biggest haunted place is in Savannah.
It's really hard to choose because everyone's kind of got their own theories. So many things have happened in Savannah in so many different places that it's really hard to say, oh, you know, like this is the most haunted area of Savannah. There are certain areas that I think are more active than others, Colonial Park being one of those. River Street is also a very haunted location. And I don't get down there too often just because it's kind of like the little touristy area downtown. And so during our busy season, I don't take anybody down there. I don't go down there myself just because there's so many people. But sometimes in the slower season, when I'm live streaming, I'll go down there. And there was one particular night that I had my dog Vash with me, and we were close to the Waving Girl statue. The Waving Girl is a woman named Florence Martis, who was known to wave to the ships as they came in. And so there's this beautiful statue of her with her dog, a collie. I had just gotten done on my live stream talking about the Waving Girl. We're walking away, and you know how dogs will do that little crouch wiggle thing when they see another dog they want to play with?
Yeah.
He starts doing this out of nowhere. And our back is to the statue. So it's not the statue that he sees. There's nothing in front of us. And he keeps trying to play with something I can't see.
Wow.
And I'm like, all right, cool. We're playing with a ghost dog now. All right. That's one of the least terrifying things I could find on River Street. So I guess I'm okay with that.
Yeah, your dog is very sensitive, like very in tune with all of that.
He is.
That's so cool. Because they say pets are very in tune with those things and they'll like watch for signs from them. Like cats will like look in a certain corner or hiss at something, or dogs will bark in a certain area or like stare somewhere or whatever. That's always spooky. Mm-hmm.
And he does a really good job because sometimes people request him on my tours. And there was one particular night where I was showing a couple around, and every place that we stopped, Vash would position himself between me and my tour guests and then something else we couldn't see. Every place he stopped, he was on guard. Wasn't growling, just positioning himself.
Huh.
He did that every single stop during that tour. And after the end, I gave him extra treats because I was like, I don't know what was following us, but good job.
Yeah, something was following. Wow, that's crazy. All right. I've heard of the Sorrel Weed House?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
So there's kind of a little joke that the moniker of most haunted house in Savannah changes every 10 years. It used to be the Hampton Lily Bridge home, but then a noise ordinance was put into place for that area of downtown. So tourists can't go there after dark. So couldn't talk about that place as the most haunted house.
Oh,
yeah. Killjoys, right?
I know.
But then everybody said that it was 432 Abercorn off of Taylor Square. But then that house was renovated. It started looking really nice. Didn't look super spooky. So we had to pick another one. And then the Sorrel Weed House became the most haunted house.
Okay.
And it is a very haunted house. I don't know about most haunted, but it's very haunted house. There are a lot of legends that have sprung up around it. One of the most popular ones being about an enslaved woman named Molly, being found dead under mysterious circumstances in the home right around the time that the owner of the home, Francis Sorrell, that his wife, Matilda, died by suicide.
Fair.
The reality about that is that, yes, Matilda did die by suicide, but it was after they moved to the house next door. They weren't living in the Sorrel Weed House then. And as far as any historians have been able to track down so far, it does not appear that Molly exists. There could have been some story around some house in that area at the time that just kind of got conflated with the Sorrel Wheat House. We're not really sure. But Matilda has been spotted in the house. Some of her children have also been spotted in the home, adult children. It's just a very creepy house in general. It's very popular for a lot of the paranormal investigators when they come to Savannah. You know, they're going to hit the Sorrel Wheat House.
Yeah, because it's the one I've heard of.
And it is really popular for that. I have never been on any investigations there, so I don't have any really good stories about that. The best I've got also involves my dog. I know I've talked about him a lot. But the history tours during the day that they offer there are actually dog friendly. You can take your dog. Hmm. And I thought, well, you know, I'm a content creator and I don't just talk about spooky stuff. I talk about things to see and do in Savannah. Vash and I will go to the Sorrel Wheat House to make this cute little video about how we got to explore this historic house by ourselves. And they start the tour. We start in the courtyard. He's fine. They take us into the carriage house. He's fine. They take us downstairs into the basement. He could not get out of there fast enough. He was on edge.
Yeah.
We go up to the first floor. He's totally fine on the first floor. So I don't know what was down there.
Yeah.
But even during the day, my dog was like, absolutely not. We're not dealing with this.
Interesting. Maybe I need to interview your dog.
Maybe.
So I just made like a whole list of like all these different stories and haunted locations that I could find about Savannah. But tell me what I can go through those and see what you say about them. Or you could just tell me what you think, like another good spot.
So when paranormal investigators come to Savannah, there's one of three places that they hit up. They go to the Sorrel Wheat House. They go to the Savannah Theater, or they go to Moon River Brewing Company. Moon River Brewing Company unfortunately closed last year, but the building is still there. And the building was actually built in the 1820s. It started off as a hotel, and then later on in the 1990s became a brewery and restaurant. I have trouble with the word brewery. It's a tough word. And as soon as that restaurant opened, people who worked there and people who were customers there had weird encounters. There, when it was a hotel, there was actually a death in the lobby. There was a guy in town who was a gambler and was known to shoot off his mouth about things and was saying some really anti-Semitic stuff about a doctor in town, Dr. Minus. And Dr. Minus wasn't going to put up with that. And he challenged this other guy to a duel, James Stark. And then they couldn't agree on where it was going to happen, what day it was going to happen, what weapons they were going to use. And finally, Dr. Minus says, you know, like, if you're willing to let this go, I'm willing to let this go. But James Stark doesn't stop shooting off his mouth. And Dr. Minus is like, well, dude, I gave you an out. You didn't take it. And so he shows up at the hotel and shoots him dead in the lobby. No one in town liked this guy. And so even though Dr. Minus, you know, was witnessed by plenty of people shooting him, when it went to trial, they were like, well, you know, kind of not coming. So James Stark still haunts Moon River. And one of my friends was actually a server there. And when you talk to the servers who worked there, they would not say James Stark's name on the property because that would get his attention. They could talk about him. They just would not mention him by name.
Yeah.
And I asked my friend about it. And she said that he has a tendency to follow people home.
Ooh.
And he followed her home one time. Mm. She had two or three cats, and her cats started acting weird, reacting to something in her apartment that she couldn't see. And she was talking to her coworkers, and they said, yeah, it sounds like James Stark followed you home. She said, well, how do I get him out? And they said, you have to put on your best third grade teacher voice and tell him you cannot stay here. You have to go back to Moon River. This is not your home. Go back to Moon River. She said it took a couple of days, but finally he went back. And after that, she made it a point never to say his name out loud.
Yeah. I wonder what he was doing at her house. I wonder how she like knew.
She said that her cats were just acting out of the ordinary. Like there was somebody else in the home that she couldn't see.
Hmm. There we go with the animals again.
Yes.
They have the best sense.
This is why if you move to Savannah, you have to have a pet.
Yeah. Oh, well, that wouldn't be hard. I have several cats right now. I'm surprised they're not here pestering. You'll see one walk by eventually, probably. You were talking about how those other houses were famous haunted houses before the Sorrel Weed one was. Can you tell me about each of those?
So we'll go in reverse order. 432 Albuquerque off of Taylor Square used to look really run down. When I first moved to Savannah, it looked like a haunted house. Nobody had lived there in several decades. If you peek through the windows, you could see black mold covering the walls, broken window panes. Like, it looked creepy. And because it was on a tour route, a lot of people started concocting stories about it. There are a lot of different legends. There's a legend that the original owner accidentally killed his daughter and she haunts that place, and how there was a triple murder in the 1950s that went unsolved and those people haunt that place. My favorite story is that, according to the legends, in the 1970s, there was a satanic ritual that summoned a demon and it still inhabits the home. Because there's always going to be one of those, right?
Yeah.
The history does not line up with any of those stories. It could be haunted, just not by any of those stories. It is built on top of the site of a burial ground, though. That area, Taylor Square and nearby Whitfield Square, were two cemeteries. Taylor Square was something called the Stranger Grounds. It's like a potter's field. Okay. Unmarked bodies, or unclaimed bodies, and poor people would have been buried in that area. And Whitfield Square, right next to it, was a historic African-American cemetery. And so 432 Albuquerque is in between those two. So I certainly think there's some history that lends itself to it being haunted. The people who currently live in the home steadfastly proclaim that it is not haunted. And I hope for their sake that they're right. But the house before that, the first most haunted house in Savannah, was the Hampton Lily Bridge. Are you familiar with Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil?
Yes.
Okay. So for your listeners who aren't aware, Midnight is the book that put Savannah on the map for a lot of people in the 1990s. And it's the mostly true account about the author's time in Savannah. And one person that he was writing about was a man named Jim Williams. Jim Williams now is most associated with the last house he lived in, the Mercer House. But before that, he had lived in the Hampton Lilybridge home. Aside from being involved in a mysterious death, he was actually known for a lot of historic preservation work in town. And he would buy a lot of these historic homes that were being threatened with demolition, and he would fix them up and sell them to people who would maintain them. One of them was the Hampton Lily Bridge. It was actually on a different lot, just like a couple of blocks over, but a bank was going to be built there. So he paid to have that house moved from that lot over to St. Julian Street, where it is now. And allegedly, heavy on the alleged, while they were relocating it, a few unmarked graves were found underneath it. There's no real documentation. Jim Williams is the one who said they found that. And God love him, Jim Williams did like to spin a tale. So who knows? But after the home was relocated, his workers were starting to fix it up. And when they had relocated the home, the staircase had been taken out, separating the first and second floors. According to Jim Williams, while his workers were inside the house, they heard someone moving around on the second floor. So they hoisted one of the workers upstairs to see what was going on, to make sure, you know, random kids hadn't broken in or something. And then they hear this guy screaming. And when they get him back down, he said that something grabbed him and was pulling him across the floor. After Jim moved in, he also had some weird experiences. He had asked one of his neighbors to keep an eye on the house while he had gone off on an antiques buying trip. And his neighbor got home one night and saw this party going on, or what he thought was a party, because the lights were on. There was music. He heard people laughing. And he thought somebody had broken into the house, knowing that Jim was gone. So he grabs a spare key. He runs over there. He puts the key in the lock. House goes dark. He steps inside. There's no one there. All the lights are out. Everything is locked up. It's quiet. Jim also said that there was a man in a gray suit that he would spot randomly throughout the house. And he believes that ghost actually followed him to the Mercer house after he moved over there.
The story of the lights going, the party going on and stuff. Like, I love stories like that. Like, it just feels like you're catching a glimpse of like a bygone time.
Mm-hmm.
I really, but we don't know if we trust his stories, right?
Don't know. But it sounds really good. And honestly, the ghosts in Savannah, yes, there are some scary ghosts here, but the majority of the ghosts, when you start talking to people about their paranormal encounters, it just sounds like they're just hanging out and enjoying the city like they did in life. So why wouldn't they throw a party?
Yeah. How did you get involved in spooky stuff and paranormal?
I had always been interested in it. I wasn't really allowed to explore it when I was younger because I grew up in a very religious household in the Bible Belt during the Satanic Panic. But once I moved off to college, I actually went to college in Pensacola, Florida, which is another really old city. And I started looking into some of the ghost stories there. After I graduated, I originally worked in print. And so I was working for various magazines. Anytime we were doing a Halloween edition, I was on top of it. Let me talk to people. I want all the ghost stories. And then when I moved to Savannah, after I kind of fell into broadcast, Savannah has so much history here and so many hauntings. When I was here for my job interview, my friend Tuquin was showing me around and she kept pointing to different houses and saying, that place is haunted, that place is haunted, that place is haunted. So it's just everywhere here. It's a part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And just in my spare time, I would look into things. Anytime someone would come to visit, I would take them on ghost tours because that's what you do when you visit Savannah. You go on a ghost tour. In 2020, I was leaving my job at the news station here to go to another job, which went away because of the pandemic shutdown. And I was at home that summer without a job. And I decided to download TikTok because, you know, at least it let me see other people outside of my house.
Okay.
And around July, people collectively on TikTok decided that time is meaningless. We're skipping ahead to Halloween. Everybody tell your ghost stories. And I thought, this is my moment to shine. So I started sharing some ghost stories, just the things that I knew about the city. And having that journalistic background, I always want to know the story behind the story. So I started looking into the history. Of course, I start talking to people about their paranormal encounters. And I wasn't trying to be an influencer or anything. This was just something to kill time. But once things started opening up, people started asking for tours because they really liked the way that I explained things. And I just fell into it.
That's fun, though.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have like paranormal experiences when you were younger or anything like that?
I had some weird encounters. But it's one of those things that, you know, as you get older, you question it. Like, was it paranormal or was I just a kid afraid of the dark? But I had some weird things happen since I moved to Savannah. I moved into an old Victorian house that had been split into three apartments. Because when you move to Savannah, you have to live in the old house at some point, right?
Yeah.
My apartment was on the second floor. That was two apartments. And my neighbor across the hallway came over to introduce himself. His name was Sam, very nice guy. As we're talking, he asked me if I believe in ghosts. And I'm thinking that is a weird warm-up question to ask somebody you just met, but sure. And he said, cool, my apartment's haunted. He mostly just stays in mine. I wanted to give you a heads up in case he wandered over to yours. And I was like, all right, dude, I've just met. And the rest of the time that he lived there, nothing ever happened. But he ended up moving off to, I think, North Carolina. And when his apartment was vacant, this was before I had a dog. I had two cats at the time. And every once in a while, they would stop and stare at the doorway into our shared hallway, like somebody had just walked through. And I was like, that was really weird. I know that Sam told me the ghost name, but I had forgotten it by this point. So I just started calling him Bob. And so anytime that would happen, I would say, hey, Bob, how's it going? And continue on my way. If somebody moved into the apartment, nothing happened. But if they moved out, if that apartment was vacant, that's when the cats would react.
Hmm.
My news station was also haunted. We found out that he was an engineer named Byron who had passed away in the 80s. He was one of those old timers, like his life was his job kind of person. Just really loved the station. I worked the overnight shift, so I worked midnight to 8 or 9 in the morning and was there largely by myself for a while. So I would hear footsteps and voices down in the lobby. And when you work by yourself, you're like, no, that's just a TV that somebody left on. That's what that is. But then more people started to hear it. And during a newscast, during one of our commercial breaks, Byron actually ran in front of one of the cameras.
What?
And because it was a commercial break, of course it wasn't recording.
Oh.
But it wasn't just me. I saw someone in a brown shirt run in front of one of the cameras. And my teleprompter operator was sitting in the studio with my anchors. I asked him if anybody had walked through. And he said, no, it is me and the anchors, and that's it in here. No one was wearing brown. I turned around to ask my director, who was sitting behind me, if he saw someone run in front of the camera. He was already staring at that screen, and his eyes are bugging out of his head. He just nodded. I was like, all right, so we both saw that. I'm not crazy. There is something here. The station ghost is real.
Yeah.
And finally, I talked to a guy who had actually worked at the station in the 80s. And when I described what we were hearing, he was like, yeah, it's Byron. He just likes hanging out.
That's so cool. It's too bad that wasn't recorded, though. Like, that was so great.
It was perfect.
They like know when we're recording and stuff.
They do.
I swear they just like do it on purpose. So do you do actual paranormal investigations now?
I have a Patreon, and for one of the tiers, I actually do a monthly paranormal investigation. Sometimes it's just something really small. I'll go hang out in one of the squares with some equipment and see if we pick up on anything, which is fun to do in the off season because, you know, the squares, that was a common area. People would go hang out there. Mm-hmm. And some people are still hanging out there, even in spirit. So you can get some really good ghost gossip out there. And sometimes I'm lucky enough to be able to investigate places around town. I'm also friends with the people at the Savannah Paranormal Museum and a podcast here in town called The Most Haunted City on Earth. And they also like to go off and do investigations. So they've been nice enough to let me tag along with them.
Wait, tell me about the Savannah Paranormal Museum.
Oh, yes. So that just opened up. It is really fun. It is owned by my friends Chris and Megan Susie. And Chris has been collecting haunted stuff forever. He loves collecting people's stories. And along the way, people just started giving him haunted objects because they're like, this is your problem now. Yeah. So Megan would not let him bring any of those haunted objects in the house. They had a shed that he had to keep them all in. She was like, no, those are not going in the house.
Smart.
finally, he had enough objects, and there's like some perfect timing with the venue becoming available that he was able to actually create the Savannah Paranormal Museum. It opened up earlier this year. And it does have like some Savannah specific things, but it has haunted objects from around the world.
That sounds amazing. Have you investigated in there? Is there a lot of stuff going on in there?
Yeah. So two of my friends, Rebecca and Theron, were in town recently. And, you know, we've been talking about, oh, we should do an investigation while you're visiting. I mentioned a couple of places and I offhandedly mentioned the Savannah Paranormal Museum and they said, yeah, I think that would be fun. So I reached out to Chris and he was more than willing to let us come in. And what we did is because there are multiple rooms, we decided that we would split up, each person go to a different room, hang out there for, you know, 20-ish minutes, then come back, compare notes, switch rooms. During that time, there's a podcast studio right next to the museum. And I had my Necrometer app going because I've had some pretty decent luck with that. I didn't have anything in that one room. It seemed kind of, for, you know, lack of a better word, dead. And so I was leaving there to go find Rebecca and Theron. And it said, to your right and behind you. And that was the door to the podcast studio. And I'm like, well, I'm not going in there because that's a locked door and it's somebody else's property, but I'll go stand next to it. And whatever it was that wanted me to go over there was heavier than what I had been dealing with in the museum. So I go back, I find Rebecca and Theron, and I'm like, this is really weird. Do you want to come and hang out over there with me? And we did. And whatever it was definitely attached to the studio next door. And because they knew that we were talking to spirits, they came over. And it was trying to be all big and tough. And we decided that singing Pink Pony Club at it would help. Because first off, who hates Chaperone? And second, it's really hard to be big and tough at three people who are singing Pink Pony Club at you. While we were doing that, Theron had their spirit box going, and it said, "Be nice, Theron." And Rebecca and I yelled at Theron, who was in another room, like, "The spirit said to be nice." And they were like, "What did I do? I have been nothing but nice since I've been here."
I think that's so interesting that you guys are singing, singing anything, but like singing a fun song. And it's just so different than some of the other more toxic energy that sometimes gets projected and like called out, and like the way people treat the paranormal or the spirits on the other side and stuff, even if they're trying to act mean and big and bad and ugly, like sometimes instead of like going to that level with them, like doing something like that, I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm. That's a different thing, because when you have like predominantly like male centered teams, because of their, you know, life experience, if somebody comes at them forcefully, they are always taught to meet force with force. Whereas more femme presenting people, you know, we have largely been taught to deflect or to try and kind of play mind games with the other person. Like, you're coming at me all big and tough and strong, we're just going to be silly. And then that's going to make you look silly. So that's what we're going with.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it though. Cause it's a totally different, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Okay. So tell me about, I kept seeing a house that came up, or it's an inn actually, 1790 inn.
Yeah, that's just a really interesting place for a lot of different reasons. The name is actually from the first year that Savannah had its own freely elected government following the revolution. And it's actually three separate buildings that were combined into one. The first level, the brick level, which is not actually the first floor, it's called the garden level. That is the restaurant, lobby, and bar. And the two upper floors, the first and second floors, are the hotel rooms. There's actually quite a few spirits that haunt that place. But the three well-known ones are Anna, who is a woman that a lot of the legends like to say fell in love with a sailor. And for one reason or another, they were separated and she watched his ship sail down the river and she threw herself from the top floor. I haven't been able to find any historic basis for that. The one Anna I found lived in the inn, but she passed away when she was in, I think, her 80s from natural causes. So that might be that Anna, and people just spun up a story around her. Mm-hmm. There's also a ghost that hangs out in the kitchen area. And I joke that he has very, very high standards for kitchen prep. And if you aren't doing things the way that he likes it, he will throw things around. And then there's also a little boy that haunts the inn. He's usually experienced on the garden level, sometimes the first floor, but he apparently likes to leave coins for people.
Oh.
I am not sure if I've actually experienced any of those spirits. I have had some experiences in the inn, but nothing that I could for sure say, oh, yeah, it's definitely one of these.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting at the bar one night, talking to one of my friends, and I was wearing a crossbody bag, and I felt somebody come up behind me and tug on the bag, just like a friend would if they saw you and trying to mess with you. So I turned around thinking it was one of my friends. No one there. And I had a guest on one of my tours who, when I told her that story, she said, I had the exact same thing happen to me. was sitting at the bar. I had my purse over my shoulder. Somebody tugged on it. I turned around wondering who that was. No one anywhere near me. So don't know if that was Anna or if it was somebody else. My Chris, who is one of the owners of the Savannah Paranormal Museum, for his birthday a couple of years ago, he wanted to celebrate by staying in the most haunted room there. And I was doing tours that night. And Chris and Megan said, you know, after you're done, like, come visit us. Like, we're going to be investigating into the wee hours. So we'll probably still be up. And when I went by, they said that things had quieted down after a while. It had been really active. But once I got there, the spirit started to get a little bit more talkative. And with some of the equipment that we had, we heard blue come through. And I have blue hair. And nobody else is wearing blue. So they were talking about me. And then they said Megan's name. And Megan flipped out. She was like, I don't like that they know my name now. So you kind of wrap things up after that.
That's so funny. You know what's interesting is I usually start an investigation by telling them my name. Like, hi, I'm Bridget, and I'm just here to chat. Heard you guys are hanging out. Like,
I do the same thing.
And then, like, sometimes they will say my name. Like, recently I've had my name said twice. And I'm like, well, I put it out there for them.
Yeah.
I told them. So, yeah, but it is eerie when you hear it back, when they say it back. You're like, oh my gosh. The last time it happened, it like chilled me to the bone. I was like, mm-hmm. That was so clear and no question that they just said my name. Well, because sometimes it's like, did they? It kind of sounded like it, right?
Yeah.
You heard it, right? We okay, I think they did. And then you're just like, okay, I think they did. But this time we were all like, oh my God, they just said my name. Like, no question. No question.
And you know, the ghost is on the other side just going, you told me your name. I said
it. I know. Like, what's the big deal? Totally. Okay. So I have to the Hamilton Turner Inn.
Mm-hmm. So that one, I'm still researching the history. It is a really beautiful house off of Lafayette Square. It's now a historic inn, so you can stay there. It's another haunted place you can stay. One of the original owners was on the electric board, and because this was, you know, around the time where electricity is still kind of a new thing and people aren't really trusting it, he had his home wired for electricity. It's the first house in Savannah to be wired for electricity. So they could, you know, show people like, look, it's not dangerous. You know, my house didn't explode. We're fine. Get your house wired for electricity. Well, I was walking by one night with one of my friends, and she pointed over and said, did I ever tell you I used to work there at the inn? And I said, no, you never mentioned that. And she said, yeah, I had to quit because I got pregnant. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, man, they fired you because you got pregnant. Like, that's illegal. You can sue them. All going on in my head. And then she continued her story and said, yeah, because the ghost kept trying to push me down the stairs.
Oh, my gosh.
She said that after she got pregnant, like when she started to show, she couldn't get up any of the stairs in the house because as she was trying to go up the stairs, she would feel something pushing against her chest, pushing her back. And she said, you know, it got to the point where I'm thinking, you know, I can't take a ghost to HR, so I just had to quit.
Interesting. Huh. And she thinks it was because she was pregnant that they were doing that, like that she didn't experience anything like that prior.
No. She had worked there for a while and before the pregnancy, never had an issue.
Wow, that is so interesting. It just makes you think, like, wonder, like, what was going on in that house before? Like, who lived there? Like, who?
And it's another one of those places that, you know, there's the legends behind it, but it's usually, like, older legends. But that place was also apartments for a while. If you read Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, there's a lawyer that they talk about in the book who kind of hopped around a lot of different places, was always into like get rich quick schemes. And he actually lived there for a little bit. Oh. So who knows? There's a lot of things that happen in that place.
I'm curious, how big is Savannah? Is it, because I always picture like this cute, quaint, small little place, but is it big?
So the historic district is the small area. That's what everybody thinks of when they think of Savannah. But it's larger than that. You know, we have South Side, we have West Side, we have East Side. And then we have smaller communities just outside of that within the same county. We have all the islands like Wilmington and everything and Tybee Island. And we have Pooler. And so it has grown out over time, but most people, when they visit Savannah, they're usually not seeing a lot of those other places. They're just seeing the historic district. And yeah, they might drive out to Tybee.
Wait, I didn't even think about islands off of Savannah. Mm-hmm. Are those haunted as well?
They are, but trying to get stories out of people out on the islands is a little bit harder.
Oh.
But that area does have a history. It's actually got some mob ties out there. And while Savannah itself doesn't have any pirate history, Tybee does. Because Tybee's technically a barrier island. It's out. And Savannah itself is actually kind of tucked into the coast. So there's a lot of indigenous history. There's pirates. There's mobsters. There's a lot going out there. And there's also forts. We have Old Fort Pulaski, which was an American army fort, and then it was used by the Confederates and later by the Union during the Civil War. And on the side of the fort, you can still see where the Union troops on Tybee used rifle cannons to fire at Fort Pulaski, and you can still see the impact marks on the side.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And there's Old Fort Screven out on Tybee Island as well that was used, I think, during World War I and II. I might be wrong about that. But there's just a lot of really weird history out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about islands right off of the coast there. So that's so fascinating. Okay, so back to Savannah proper.
Okay.
Let's see where I'm on my list here. The Wright Square executions?
Yes. So Wright Square, I always say, has seen some of the worst parts of the city's history. It was nicknamed Courthouse Square because there has always been a courthouse on that square, even dating back to colonial times. Wright Square is one of our four original squares. It was also nicknamed Hanging Square. Because it was a site of public executions. You had your courthouse, you had your jail, executions. And it was also the site of a slave market. There was a slave market located just off of the square in front of one of the courthouses. So it has seen people lose their lives. And it's also seen families ripped apart.
Mm-hmm.
So while I can't really say it's the most haunted square in Savannah, it's got a heaviness to it that you don't experience in a lot of the other squares.
Yeah. Is there a story about somebody named Alice Riley associated with it?
Yes. So if you look up the first woman executed for murder in Georgia, Alice Riley's name comes up. She was an indentured servant. She was maybe about 15 years old when she signed this contract to bring her over to the colonies. She wasn't actually supposed to end up in Savannah, but something went wrong. She ended up here. And the farm that she was assigned to was run by this absolute slimeball of a guy. It's bad when there's historic documentation about how everyone in town hates you and is actively trying to get you kicked out and sent back to England. No one liked this guy. And there's some rumors that maybe, you know, he took advantage of her. We're not really sure. But one day he was found drowned in his own bathtub. Even though nobody really liked him. And they were like, well, he had it coming, you know, cue celebrate tango. They had to figure out who murdered him because, you know, there's a murderer out there. And, you know, they might kill somebody we actually like next time. But they didn't have crime scene investigation in the 1730s. So they rounded up a bunch of suspects, including some indentured servants on the farm. Everybody is let go except for two, Alice and another servant named Richard. Now, they are Irish Catholic in a British Protestant colony. Now, at the time, we also didn't have lawyers, so they had to represent themselves in court. Mm. And, of course, there was a lot of prejudice against Irish people and against Catholics at that time, so they were almost immediately found guilty, and they were sentenced to hang. Now, Alice soon after reveals that she's pregnant, and according to the documentation that we have, she never publicly revealed who the father was. There's a lot of speculation. But the city officials said, yeah, you know, we're not going to hang you right now because you're pregnant, but we will hang you later. We're just going to wait till after you have the kid. So several months go by. She gives birth to a little baby boy. And the day they're going to hang Alice and Richard, because they wanted to hang them both on the same day, city officials go to get them out of the jail. The square is full of people. And when they get there, Alice is by herself. Richard escaped and he left her there.
Oh, nice.
So this poor little girl, who by this point would have been maybe 16 or 17, is facing the wrath of the colony for something that she may not have actually been involved in. And so they hanged her by herself. Richard does get caught. They hang him the next day. So he doesn't get away either. This is already a really, really tragic story. And all of this is 100% true. Her baby dies a couple of weeks later. And it's such a sad story. And a lot of people, the version that I was always told was that, you know, Alice is still seen wandering right square looking for her baby. And the people I've talked to who have had encounters with her, in my experience with her, has not been that. She is, in my opinion, very aware of who she is and where she is and what's going on around her. So when I do tell her story, I try to be very respectful of her because, you know, I think if somebody was talking about the worst parts of my life in front of me night after night, I'd want them to be a little considerate. So I try to be as respectful as possible. And not everybody is as nice. My friend Ever was in the square one night and saw Alice, which wasn't unusual. Ever sees spirits sometimes. And Ever just looked like a totally normal teenage girl wearing a white dress, hanging out in the square. And then a tour group came through, and the tour guide, I assume, had seen one too many episodes of, you know, like some paranormal show where they yell at the spirits and get them riled up. And so this tour guide starts to yell at some really inflammatory things about Alice and also her baby, which I feel was a step too far. And they never see Alice. But Ever does. And Ever said that Alice physically changed in front of her and went from looking like a totally normal girl to her face becoming haggard and her waist, her dress from the waist down was bloody. And after Ever told me about that, I was like, yep, I'm going to be very, very respectful of how I talk to her and try to give her space when I can, because that's not okay.
Yeah.
Ever and their wife and I, around Alice's death anniversary, we go to the square. And we always have a little picnic. We bring out tea. Always set a place for Alice because I figure, you know, like I talk about her, other people talk about her. It would be nice to give something back to her sometimes. So we always have a place for her when we go out there. I've never seen her the way that Ever has, but I've picked up on her a few times. There was one night where I was walking through the square with a family and they had a daughter who was about Alice's age. And the daughter turned to ask me a question and said Alice's name out loud. As soon as she said that, I felt her pop up behind me. I just felt this presence instantly. Like, you called? And I was like, nope, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
I did not call for you. Yeah. But it's good to know you're here. You're okay. We're okay. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Oh, that's a sad. Do you know what happened to the baby?
We don't know why the baby died. Because it was the 1730s, it could have been anything. It could have been malnutrition. Yeah. It could have been illness. Don't know.
And it's such an interesting story, too. Like, who was the father? Like, was it the horrible guy that she was working for? Was it the Richard guy? Was it a boyfriend? And who killed him? Was it Richard? Because I feel like if he was trying to, like us, I guess whether you did it or not, if you were going to be, like the possibility of being hanged, you'd want to like run maybe, but I just feel like that's, he did it.
Yeah. I don't have a very high opinion of Richard. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. Like just makes you, it's interesting, all of that stuff, but then it makes you want more as well. Like mm-hmm. all the details.
There's so much unknown about that. Unfortunately, Savannah's caught on fire a lot of times. And some of the earlier documentation is just gone. A lot of what we actually know about the Alice Riley case is because of letters that were sent from Savannah back to England.
Okay. Well, I still have like a big old list, but I know we're getting out of time. I have a question though. I saw that there are It's like one of the only places in the world where there are graves on the runway of the airport.
Yes. So Savannah's airport has two graves built into one of the runways, and then there's a third grave right next to it. The area where the airport is started off as a farm, and there was a family lot out there. When the property was sold, everyone was moved except for those three people. According to the family, those three people really loved that farm and would not have wanted to be moved. So when the runways were laid out, two of them ended up in a runway and their headstones are just inlaid into the runway. And then there's a third one off to the side. I look every time I've flown out or flown into the airport, I look like, am I on that runway? I haven't seen it yet.
I just saw photos of it. I mean, they look pretty small. They don't look like they're very big and they look like they could just be like a paving stone or something. Mm-hmm. But I did see a photo of it and I was like, wait, that is so crazy. I have to ask about that. But I mean, I had so many other things too. Like there's the Oglethorpe Square and the Shrimp Factory, Marshall House. The list just goes on and on. But you're right. We can't get to it all today. We just have to like come and do the tour or like do the podcast again because there's so much stuff.
Hey, I'm always down for a part two.
Yes. I do have one more question. Tell me something. You said in the beginning in your bio that you do like all the haunted history and weird things about Savannah. Is there anything else that's like a really weird fun fact that you know of?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I can think about that for a second.
It's okay if nothing comes to mind. I just thought maybe there's something that like, you're like, this is a weird fun fact. Kind of like the graves.
There's a lot. There is a face on the side of the federal courthouse.
Sure.
We have off of Wright Square, it's very large federal courthouse that was built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And the architect hit his face on the side of the building. Allegedly, it's both on the north and south sides. I've only ever found it on the south side. I keep looking on the north side. I haven't found it yet. But I found it. I found it it's on the second floor. There's two windows that have a curved top to them. And where the curves meet in the middle, there's his face, just carved.
How interesting. Huh. Okay. I just have some roundup questions for you.
Sure.
Okay. Scariest paranormal place you've ever been, and it doesn't have to be Savannah. It could be anywhere.
Maybe the Castillo de San Marco in St. Augustine, Florida.
Yeah.
Some of my friends and I had gone down there for an investigation at the lighthouse. That had been a lot of fun. And we were like, well, we're having such a great night. Let's go to the outside of the Castillo because the inside was closed, but you could still walk around the outside. And as we were out there, we had one of those music boxes that has the sensor on it. So if anything passes in front of it, it goes off. And that kept acting really weird. We had a couple of spirit box type things that we were working with, and they kept saying things like they kept mentioning family members, like our family members' names. And after a while, we were like, we're done. Don't know what that is, but we don't like that. It's getting a little personal real quick.
Yeah.
We should have been at this at the lighthouse where everything was fine.
The lighthouse was good though, too. I've always wanted to go. I've heard so many stories about it.
It was a lot of fun. The little girls who haunt that place were really active. And we actually did an SD session where we played hide and go seek with them. And it was so much fun.
Yeah. That sounds cool. Okay. Favorite paranormal tool to use besides yourself?
I really want one of those music boxes. I've gotten to use it when other people have had it, and it's been a lot of fun. I really like my pendulum and my pendulum board, but you also have to be very careful where you're using that because it can react to air conditioning or breeze blowing. So I don't get to use it as much as I would like, but I've enjoyed it when I do get to use it.
Yeah. Okay, best evidence that you've ever captured or seen?
Hmm.
Let's see.
I can't think of anything. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences, but it's kind of hard to qualify like best.
Okay, that's fine. Do you carry anything to protect yourself?
Yes, I have a necklace that I usually wear. It's got the evil eye on it. And I usually have like some crystals in my pockets.
Okay. What kind of crystals?
It's just whatever appeals to me that time. I just kind of, you know, just use my senses, like which one feels right for this one.
Okay. All right. Paranormal place that you haven't been yet, but are dying to go to.
Oh God, there's so many.
I know, me too. I have the biggest list and it changes all the time.
I would love to investigate inside the Castillo. I don't know if that's something that they will ever allow me to do just because that's a state park. But I would love to do that. There is a place close to where I grew up. There's a little town called Mariana, Florida, and there's the legend of the Bellamy Bridge over there about a woman who accidentally caught on fire on her wedding night and tried to run down to the Shikola River to put herself out. And, you know, on a dark night, you see this woman on fire running down to the river. And I would love to go back out there now that I've had some experience and do an investigation. It was one of those places that you went to when you were younger and it's like, oh, is something going to happen? Yes. But now that I actually have a better idea of what I'm doing, I would love to go back and check that out. I don't know. There's so many places.
I know, but I love that answer because it's different than like a lot of people, including myself, always say like some of the big ones, like, oh, Waverly Hills or, you know, something like that. So I love hearing like something smaller and more like local to where you grew up. Like, I love that. So I think Thanks. That's a great answer. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing Savannah's stories with us. Tell everybody listening how they can book a tour with you or join your Patreon, all of that stuff.
So you can find me on my website, enicaenfieldtours.com. And I'm on Patreon as Enica Edenfield.
Awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Oh, wait, before we go, can we meet your cat?
Oh, yeah. Let's see if she's still out there.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. So excited. So excited.
This is Lilith.
Look, you're beautiful. You're so pretty. Were you telling us all about it?
Mm-hmm. She's got lots of opinions.
Yes. Oh my gosh, she's gorgeous. I love a black cat. Okay, I'll wrap this up now. I just had to meet the cat.
No priorities, I understand.
Yeah, it's for sure. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me on my spooky adventures, and I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to my new podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out, and follow me on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram and on YouTube. And that's the video version of the podcast. And then Patreon, I swear I haven't left you guys. I just have been really behind on things. We've got videos coming. I've been to so many cool locations. So that's Ghost Bunny on Patreon for spooky tours, investigations, and more content. Thanks, guys. Mwah.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters.
On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.